Welcome back to Insight, live on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. 16 years ago, a Sacramento teenager was shot and killed in a local park over the Christmas holiday. He was the son of a Capitol staff person, and the impact of his death reverberated throughout the California legislature. Then last year, in 2018, the case came back to the State House when Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon delivered a plea for clemency to Governor Jerry Brown. That was on behalf of one of the men who was convicted in that shooting, because that man is Anthony Rendon's brother-in-law. If you're already not quite following, let me say from the get-go, this is a complicated case, but it also gives a vivid example of how California is changing in its approach to criminal justice. CalMatters senior editor Dan Moraine investigated and has reported and now written a piece about this case. It's called A Capital Crime, How a 16-Year-Old Murder Reached California's Highest Offices. Dan's here to talk about it. Always a pleasure to have you back on Insight.
Great to be back, Beth.
To get into the story, let's talk about the two critical characters in this conversation and start with the teenager.
Well, they were all teenagers
at the time. You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
So the young man who was killed.
So Matthew Seifert was 19 years old. He's the son of a single mom who lives here in Sacramento. Her name is Stephanie Milo. He had a high school girlfriend named Nicole Carroll, and they had broken up. And somehow she had started venting about him to another friend, a guy who had a crush on her, a 17-year-old guy named John Lamb. And John Lamb thought that maybe he would impress Nicole by offering to beat up Matthew Seifert. And it was a crazy, stupid thing. And so their plan was to get a bunch of John Lamb's friends together, and they would basically ambush Matthew, unbeknownst to him, of course, and beat him up. Well, one thing led to another. One of the guys had a gun. Actually, two of them had guns, but one pulled it and at this park, Tahoe Park, early on Christmas Eve morning, about 1 a.m., this poor young 19-year-old kid got shot for no reason at all.
A group of nine teenagers had confronted him.
Well, actually 10, but 10. Yes. And so he was set up and he was killed, and that left poor Stephanie Milo on Christmas morning at UC Davis Medical Center, which is where he succumbed. He died. So it was a incredibly sad story happening over the Christmas holiday. Anytime, of course, a murder is awful.
How much coverage was there of the murder at the time?
So the Sacramento Bee, I'm not sure what the television stations did, but I looked up the Sacramento Bee stories. There was one story before the arrests were made. The arrests were made early in January of John Lamb and this girl, Nicole Carroll. But really very little, nothing about the trial. There were a few little short mentions of this case in the court. Never a connection to the state capitol, which is where Stephanie Milo, Matthew's mom, had worked for. And when she started working there in 1986, she retired in 2010, so she was there 24 years. Lots of people knew her. She was a staffer, one of the, thousands. Staffers who work for the Assembly or Senate in and around the Capitol.
In the story, you write that the Sacramento County Deputy District Attorney, Donnell Slivka, prosecuted John Lamb, Nicole Carroll, and two others. It all happened in a single jury trial. And to this day, the girlfriend, Nicole Carroll, is in jail, as is John Lamb and others. Let me fast forward to the part of the story that gets much more attention, and that is last year when the clemency conversation came before Governor Jerry Brown. To say how that happened, let's back up and talk about John Lamb's sister.
Sure. So John Lamb is the fifth of five children. He's the youngest brother. His older sister, Annie Lamb, took a very different path. She went off to college. She went to UC Davis. She graduated. She began working in the Capitol. She worked for then Assemblywoman Judy Chu and then Assemblyman Mike Eng. Judy Chu's now in Congress. Judy Chu and Mike Eng are husband and wife.
And she was actually working there at the same time that Matthew's mother was, but they didn't know each other.
It's such a small town, such a small world that this was. Yes. Yeah, so Annie Lamb was working in the Capitol probably in a, I'm not sure exactly when, but like I want to say 2005. Lamb was tried and convicted in 2005 and sentenced in 2006. 2006 was the year that she and Anthony Rendon, before Rendon was in the assembly, met. They met working on Mike Eng's campaign in 2006. So anyway, so John Lamb is sentenced to 26 years to life. The shooter's sentenced to life in prison without parole. Nicole Carroll sentenced to life in prison, a similar sentence to what John Lamb got. So they all go off to prison in 2006. That's when Annie Lamb is working for Mike Eng's election, and Anthony Rendon was campaign manager for Mike Eng. None of them knew the connection to Stephanie Milo at this time.
So now we have the piece that Anthony Rendon is married to Annie Lamb.
Fast forward.
And fast forward again, and he becomes the assembly speaker. Now, by now, Matthew's mom has retired.
Yeah, Matthew's mom, Stephanie, retired in 2010. Anthony Rendon was elected in 2012, reelected in 2014. 2014 is the year Annie Lamb and Anthony Rendon married. They married in December of that year. Rendon becomes speaker and is speaker when Jerry Brown is governor in his second term. This whole time, John Lamb has been doing his time and has been clearly, based on his clemency petition, trying to turn his life around behind prison walls. You know, he's at Corcoran State Prison, which is one of the two really heavyweight prisons in California. I mean, they're all heavyweight. Mm-hmm. But Corcoran and Pelican Bay are the maximum security prisons in the state of California. He's at Corcoran down in the Central Valley. And there he gets his high school diploma. He starts taking community college courses. You know, he goes to all the sort of self-help groups that are available in prison. He moves from Corcoran to another prison and another prison, and then finally in 2012 he gets moved to San Quentin. San Quentin is of course the place where death row is, but it's also one of the two top prisons for rehabilitative programs. And so John Lamb gets involved in all of them, all of the above. He works on the prison newspaper. He goes to gang anonymous groups, drug groups, restorative justice. I mean, he gets involved in all of them. This you can read from his clemency petition, which I ended up getting my hands on.
John Lamb himself, though, did not agree to talk with you, correct?
No. His lawyer, John Lamb's parole hearing. So the way it works, I mean, I suppose we could jump ahead a little bit here, but so Anthony Rendon delivers the clemency petition to Jerry Brown. It's 192 pages. It includes a letter from the lawyer. It includes a letter from John Lamb. It includes a bunch of laudatory letters from people who have known John Lamb in prison. Includes a bunch of notes from correctional officers who have dealt with Lamb while he's in prison. All laudatory. He's never been disciplined while in prison. So he's done his time well.
I think it's important to talk about what relationship had or hadn't been between John Lamb and Anthony Rendon.
So they've Speaker Rendon did speak with me, and he has. I have zero reason to doubt what he told me, which is he's never met John Lamb in person. He's talked to him. He told me twice. He thought it was twice. Brief telephone conversations around holiday times and such. So he's never actually met John Lamb. Obviously, he knows of John Lamb, but he doesn't know him, hasn't met him for a variety of reasons. But mostly it's a family issue on his wife's side, and he what he told me is he just isn't going to press the issue. It's their issue, and he just leaves it at that.
I'm talking, by the way, with Dan Morane from Cal Matters, and we're talking about the reporting piece he just did, which is titled A Capital Crime, How a 16-Year-Old Murder Reached California's Highest Offices. And we've fast-forwarded from the murder that happened in 2003 now to this clemency request that came to Governor Jerry Brown last year. You write in the article, Dan, few governors would ignore such a request from a legislative leader.
Yeah, of course they wouldn't. Anthony Rendon and Jerry Brown are of the same party. They're on the same team. Of course, if the speaker delivers a clemency package to the governor and asks that he take a look at it, of course the governor's going to take a look at it. So that is what. That's what Anthony Rendon did. He said beyond that, he did nothing. There was no conversation after that between Jerry Brown and Anthony Rendon, at least none that I'm aware of. Jerry Brown was a very different governor on this issue in his second term in office. You know, we all know that Jerry Brown was a Jesuit seminarian, truly believes, I think, to his core that people believes in redemption. And he also believes that prison sentences are way too long. He also believes, I think, that people who commit terrible crimes when they're 17 can grow, can change. So in his tenure, as mostly in his second term in office, he granted more than 280 clemencies. Now, a clemency is basically a reduction in a prison sentence. Mm. A pardon is once you're out of prison, you get and you've committed a crime, you get a pardon if you've turned your life around. By and large. Anyway, he granted more than 1,300 pardons and more than 280 clemencies. And in and among these were a lot of people who did some really bad things. I mean, these were double murderers, a couple double murderers. There were numerous people who had been sentenced to life in prison without parole. One was John Lamb, who was sentenced to 26 years to life. What Governor Brown did in John Lamb's case was knock 10 years off his prison term. So he's currently sentenced to 16 years to life. And he goes before the parole board, which will make the decision as to whether or not he gets a parole date, goes to the parole board later this month in May.
Because we are now at 16 years.
We are at 16 years. It has been 16 years. Now, you know, it's interesting. The last segment, you were talking to Carla Marinucci about, you know, big time politics and presidential campaigns. Really, so much of politics comes down to this really gritty sort of person-to-person decision-making, right? I mean, Jerry Brown had read this guy's petition. He had given this fellow's 192-page clemency petition to a team of lawyers who gave it to the parole board investigator who spent, you know, no doubt months working on this investigation. Really, politics in this instance came down to a very sort of human level. And ultimately, the governor in November last year, just before Thanksgiving, granted clemency to a whole bunch of people. One of them was John Lamb.
So talk about that outcome from the perspective of Matthew's mother.
Well, you know, Matthew's mother is like I said, you know, just a salt of the earth woman. You know, this she was a single mom. This was her life. Matthew was her life. He lived with her. He borrowed her car to go to Tahoe Park, the neighborhood playground where he was murdered. You know, they were, you know, obviously very close. And, you know, so here she is 16 years later. She has no mercy for these guys. She has, you know, she doesn't, she just believes that this is wrong, that they should have spent, that they should spend their lives in prison. And you know, I mean, she has a life sentence. Matthew has a life sentence. And so she thinks these other people should have one as well. And you know, you have to sympathize with this woman. She's just, you know, this has been a terrible thing for her.
Did Anthony Rendon and Jerry Brown talk directly about this case? It seems from your article that there was a bit of an exchange. I don't know if that was at the time of the delivery of the packet or after that.
Yeah, as far as I know, and you know, I spoke to the governor and I spoke to the speaker about this and their staff. And as near as I can tell, this was their one conversation. Now, you know, if there had been more, I wouldn't be shocked, but I know that they had this one conversation when Anthony Rendon delivered the package to Governor Brown in Governor Brown's office. Rendon described it as being very Jerry Brown-like. Basically, Brown started talking about theology and redemption and these sorts of things, and also that he thought that sentences were too, as Brown said, too damned long.
Tell me more about the governor's perspective. And he certainly hasn't been the kind of person that second guesses what he decides. Yeah. But I would like to hear more about his bigger view.
Well, that's what Jerry Brown's view is that when he was governor the first time, there were maybe 30,000 people in prison. When he took office the second time in 2011, there were almost 170,000 people in prison. He just thought that that sentencing had gone overboard, that prison population was way too large. There were way too many people in prison for the wrong reasons. Now, this is a guy who's not going to, free Sirhan Sirhan, the guy who murdered Robert Kennedy. He's not going to grant clemency to people who were part of the Manson family. But there are other people who he thinks have shown by their actions in prison that they deserve a second chance. I mean, in 2016, he pushed this initiative, Prop 57. At its root, what Prop 57 did was to say, if you get an education if you get a trade in prison, that you can have a chance of getting out. That's basically what Prop 57 said. And he was the only guy behind this. This was not something that had, you know, big money behind it. This was something he funded by his own fundraising, and he was the only real proponent of it out there. Now, of course, you know, the ACLU and the lefties got behind it as well, but this was his idea.
So May 29th is the parole board hearing for John Lamb. Mm-hmm. Any indication of why it might go in a certain direction?
No clue. I mean, I'm not a student of how the parole board works. You know, I'm sure they're aware of everything that I'm aware of, everything that I wrote about in this story. So nothing about it is going to surprise them. I doubt it's going to sway them one way or the parole board one way or the other. I can't imagine. you know, this story does bring some attention to it. So unlike many of them, many of these cases, you know, they kind of rarely get much attention these days.
Well, there's much more to this. We'll post a link for people to read through it. And I think for a lot of people, Capitol staffers, it's going to bring up, admittedly, some pain, some difficult memories. But it is a very present day story for all the reasons that we just talked about. I'm glad to have you back in the studio. I think it's a fascinating piece.
Thank you very much, Beth.
That is Cal Matters' Dan Morain. Again, the story is A Capital Crime, How a 16-Year-Old Murder Reached California's Highest Offices. You can find a link at capradio.org/insight. And this is Insight on Cap Radio.